everybody, and we welcome you to our Saturday morning Bible study. Today is November 24th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America, and we welcome you all. And this morning, our moderator is Linda from Pennsylvania.
Good morning. I'm going to begin by reading from an article titled Watching versus Watching Out, from Miscellany, by Mary Baker Eddy. Quote, is there not something to watch in yourself, in your daily life, since by their fruits ye shall know them, which prevents an effective watch? Otherwise, wherefore the Lord's Prayer, deliver us from evil. And if this something, when challenged by truth, frightens you, could you not put that out instead of putting out your watch? I surely should. Then are you not made better by watching? I am. What should we prefer, ease or dis-ease in sin? Is not discomfort from sin better adapted to deliver mortals from the effects of the belief in sin than ease in sin? And can you demonstrate over the effects of other people's sins by indifference thereto? I cannot. The scriptures say, they have healed also the hurt of the daughter of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace. Jeremiah 6:14. Thus taking the name of God in vain. Ignorance of self is the most stubborn belief to overcome, for apathy, dishonesty, sin follow in its train. One should watch to know what his errors are, and if this watching destroys his peace in error, should one watch against such a result? He should not. Our Master said, he that taketh not his cross and followeth after me is not worthy of me. And he that loses his life, his false sense of life, for my sake shall find it. Matthew 10, verses 38 and 39. End quote.
Great. Thank you.
All of you who watch, and those, even those who don't watch, you should all be very familiar with this article. Wonderful statement by Mrs. Eddy. And I love, if this watching destroys his peace in error, should one watch against such a result? Well, this is what this timely Bible study is going to be aimed to do, destroy your peace in error.
And show you the importance of not getting mad at the messenger who destroys your peace in error.
Yeah.
But rather get mad at the error.
I thought it was interesting. I had not put together before where it says peace, peace, where there is no peace, thus taking the name of God in vain. I don't think I ever thought about the name of God in vain as the other name of God, like peace or truth or love and all that. So that's something I'll be thinking about a lot this week, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you.
Well, Jesus had this to meet all the time, didn't he? A lot of people were very uncomfortable in his presence. It was the error in them that made them uncomfortable. And instead of going into thought and finding the error they were uncomfortable about, instead they got mad at the messenger that made them uncomfortable. In fact, they tried to kill him, didn't they? There are people who tried to destroy Mrs. Eddy whatever legal way they could, for the same reason. any good practitioner of Christian Science has to be aware that there are going to be people who will react negatively to their presence, to their prayers, and recognize that it's the error just coming to the surface. And as a patient, we all need to be aware that none of us is perfect yet. And if I feel uncomfortable about something, instead of getting mad at the situation or the person, take a look inside. Is there an error that's coming to the surface? Wouldn't it be much better to deal with the error than to fight with the person or get angry with the person? Or yeah, just avoid a situation that makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, which some people withdraw, back down, leave, because they don't want to have to face what they need to face. And they will have to face it sooner or later, so why not sooner when just a little serpent before it grows into the red dragon? And if you ever are rankled by anything that anyone says, then do look within. If you're at peace with yourself, you won't be rankled. You'll, okay, well, maybe I could do that better, or maybe that person is just off base, but you won't find yourself. The pride won't be rankled. You'll be okay about it. You certainly won't hate the messenger.
And that's a healthy state of mind, which we should all strive for. That humility that is willing to look within.
This is one thing that Christian Science always does. It brings things to the surface some way. And then one thing that's always helped me is something we've been taught so many times before, was to trust God's disposal of events. While I find myself feeling like I want to react or respond in an adverse way to something, go back to God, you know, everything belongs to God, and I should trust Him to dispose of things in His way, and let His cause, purpose, or whatever it is, work out whatever way He deems it to be so. That way there's no need to feel like you need to regulate anything, get disturbed over anything. Rather, God is working out His purpose. And we'll listen to Him, go with His guidance.
Kind of interesting in reading Jeremiah, I never made the connection to listening to this morning, that the more they hated him and hated his message and the things they said about him, the more stiff, I guess you could say, their necks became, and more stubborn and hard the hearts were. And so that is more of a warning to not allow pride to keep you from hearing what the messenger is saying. Otherwise, you're really setting yourself up for a big fall.
I think not just pride or guilt or any self-condemnation on any of those thoughts that come. That thought that will barb the arrow, right?
Yeah, and it always shows you've personalized the error. You think it's you. You think it's you, therefore your feelings get hurt. The error is never you. The error is not you, the good is not you. Call no man good but our Father, which is in heaven. So don't get all prideful and blown up if you get praise. That can sometimes be worse than getting a rebuke. And then on the other hand, don't get all down and guilty and condemning or angry or hateful or whatever when you get a rebuke. Either one is wrong. Take it impersonally. Always, that keeps you in the safe spot, the secret place of the Most High. And you can gauge yourself by how you're feeling. If you're beginning to feel prideful, you're uh-oh. If you're feeling the other way, condemnatory and down on yourself or hateful what someone said, revengeful, then uh-oh. Get back where you're impersonalizing it. I think I'm going to read something now. I wasn't sure whether to when to do it, but I felt very impelled. Something had come up on my computer. It was about a prophecy. That a prophecy by a Norwegian woman. It was made in 1968, and an evangelist had a meeting with her and wrote down what she said, but said at the time it seemed so unbelievable that he put it in a drawer. But after many years, he decided to share the vision with others. I'll just read a part of the vision that she had, and it was about the Christian. She said, "A lukewarmness without parallel will take hold of the Christian, a falling away from true living Christianity. Christians will not be open for penetrating preaching. They will not, like in the earlier times, want to hear of sin and grace, law and gospel, repentance and restoration. There will come a substitute instead, prosperity, happiness, Christianity. The important thing will be to have success, to be something, to have material things, things that God never promised us in this way. Churches and prayer houses will be emptier and emptier. Instead of the preaching we have been used to for generations, like to take your cross up and follow Jesus, entertainment, art, and culture will invade the churches, where there should have been gatherings for repentance and revival. This will increase markedly. And it said, this follows a long period of détente, which means no major huge wars, sort of a period of peace in a way. So with that peace comes this complacency. And I mean, if you don't see it here today, I'm sure you all do, I would call this description as New Age, the new religion. Nothing much is demanded of you. You make your, what's it called?
Oh, vision board.
Vision board. You make your vision board and plan what you want in your life and then see it come to pass. And sometimes it does. The prophets of Baal did many things.
Which is interesting, because some time ago we went over some things from what Satanists believe, and their main tenet is do what thou wilt. So,
do what thou wilt. It's penetrating our society, certainly our youth, if you do not watch over your youth. And then they resist. They don't want to hear this other stuff. Nothing, don't tell me. It's what Mrs. Eddy said in this article that Linda quoted from. Peace when there is no peace. And who needs any of this examining your thought or following the Christ? That doesn't sound like a lot of fun. I don't want to do it. So... And this is what we must never lose in what we are doing. And if we don't attract millions of people, that's all right. If we are the remnant, well, that's all right too. It's better this, because this is the true science. This is what works. This is what you'll read in Retrospection and Introspection under Faith Cure. This is exactly what Mrs. Eddy's talking about. You want the healing, and everything lovely and the magic wand, and just believe and it will be so. But no, none of this other more difficult thing that we have to sometimes go through. And it goes on with some other things about the immorality of the time, also the television, that all of this awful stuff comes right into your home. It's certainly a huge form of mesmerism. And if terrible ads are all on these drugs, just pounding you, mesmerizing, propaganda, not to mention the news is propaganda. And then he says, later, he says, this guy that's writing this article, his name is Emmanuel Minos, he said, I am repeating this vision to you because of what the Lord showed me in 2002. Not as detailed, but just as harrowing. Many of you may remember this vision I had of the stampede. In it, I saw a stampede like cattle of modern Christianity heading straight for a cliff. And although some of us were yelling at them and waving our arms, I could not get their attention. Then the Lord spoke to me and told me, even if they could hear you, which they can't, they will not listen. I knew that the only things that can end a stampede is either to let them run themselves out, which there was time for that, or something explosive would have to happen to break the hypnotic sway that they were all mesmerized with. Immediately, I thought of 9/11, but that had already happened. And then I realized that something else was coming, much greater than 9/11 or Katrina. And then the vision broke. And then he goes on, I won't say, but what happens is, you know, not good. Sounds like a nuclear war or something. So this is what we have been talking about, where we can stand and change history. But we must stand. We must do this work. And if there's just a few of us, so be it. But to think you can leave it undone, or to think that there's peace when there is no peace, please, very foolish. And that is not real science. I know everyone just wants the lovey-dovey part and let's be loving and all is well. That is true, but let's prove it, please. So please prove it for me and then I will be very happy. So we are all proving it. We prove it day by day in our own lives. But these are modern-day prophecy, and every bit, if not even more important. Bruce was talking about Washington's prophecy, and what were the three?
Now, there were three visions that he received. The first was, and this was at a time when he was in the middle of the Revolutionary War. He was at Valley Forge in the winter, trying to hold his troops together to survive the winter and continue with the war. And he was alone in his little cabin, but he felt a presence. And this presence hovered over him, called him Son of the Republic, and essentially explained to him three visions. One of them was the ultimate victory, the victory of the Revolutionary War. Also prophesied the Civil War and the ultimate victory for the Union. Then there was a third vision. And it was described as a big black cloud that came up from Africa, across Europe, across the Atlantic Ocean, and across America, and described it as a battle that was just fierce like none other, much destruction. But the encouraging thing about it was, ultimately, there would be a victory for the Union. But evidently this third vision is yet to come.
Or perhaps we're in it.
Yeah, we're in it, yeah. I remember when I first discovered that on the internet, read it. It was all I could do to hold it back, because I felt like we are in it now. Not an outward war in the sense that there's horrific violence, everything all over, but it's going on. But it's not stopped. It will result in big violence. Right.
And what did Mrs. Eddy say when she implored Christian Scientists to keep watch over the world? What did she predict if we did not do this work?
Another 1900 years of darkness.
Yeah, we'd go into another dark ages, worse than the last one.
Reign of terror.
2100.
2100. And if not, we can have the reign of Christ for 1,000 years. Now let's do that one, all right? That sounds a lot better. But she does say these things. They're also not in her authorized literature, so sleep on, organization, sleep on.
But with Christian Science, we can understand what these things mean. But the human so-called mind is a killer. And if we are aware of it, if we are alert to it, if we are willing to put it off, we can see things that we need to see, and we can prevent things before they happen.
And we are. So this is why we do this work and never think it's in vain, because things we prevent, we'll never know. Sometimes we do hear later what things were prevented, but not always. So remember this and keep yourself sober. And Mrs. Eddy has said, in order to do a good watch, what must you feel?
Feel the danger.
Thank you. You must feel the danger, which is why we're having this discussion. And you know darn well when you don't feel the danger, you're probably just sitting there snoozing away. you kind of feel like what you're doing is so important. If you're the last Christian Scientist on Earth when you're praying. And we're told to do that, have that in our hearts. Okay, any more comments? Otherwise, we will now get to Jeremiah.
Well, I did want to add, in Miscellaneous Writings on 246, Mrs. Eddy is talking about the Civil War. And it was interesting because she did say something. One quote she said, "A conflict more terrible than the Battle of Gettysburg awaits the crouching wrong that refuses to yield its prey, the peace of a desert." And she went on to say, "Shall religious intolerance degrade against the rights of man, again deluge the earth in blood?" And then there was one quote that I found great comfort in, and she was referring to the Civil War. And she said, "Had to be purged of that sin by human gore." And this is the part that I found most comforting, where she says, quote, "When the love of Christ would have washed it divinely away in Christian Science," with an exclamation point, end quote. And that's what we're trying to do here. Share this Christian Science. Wash it away with Christ.
Thank you. I'd like you to post those quotes, please.
Okay. And then I did want to add in a commentary about Jeremiah. The writer says, "It pained him to think that such a critical time, when the fate of the Jewish people hung in the balance, there should be false prophets among them, and worse still, that there were many Jews who allowed themselves to be misled and deceived by them." And that was one of the biggest things that Jeremiah struggled with, was these false prophets who kept saying, "It's going to be okay, it's going to be good, we're going to all have our, you know, time, you know, our country back, and we'll get all our wealth back," and they were all false, and they would not listen to Jeremiah, and actually, he kept warning them until the final total destruction. So I think this is very interesting in light with what you just read.
Thank you very much.
All right. False prophets that were crying out, "Peace, peace," when there wasn't any peace.
Exactly. Right under their noses while they were in exile.
Yes. And they were left alone, or maybe they had millions and millions in their congregation.
Yes, they did have the popularity. You're right.
That's the masses. That's the modern Christianity that this person spoke of. It was interesting, calling it like a stampede. He understood the mesmeric nature of it. And even when you're yelling at them, they don't hear it. They're
exactly.
Just blinded to it. So, and I thank Linda, because she had the wisdom, and it is wisdom, to have had this Bible class today. Could have taken the class Saturday off. We could have I'm taking another one off too, but better to be here, better to stay awake rather than just be drifting off with all our turkey and mashed potatoes.
Black Friday shopping.
And Black Friday shopping.
Football games.
Yeah. Here in Plainfield, we were always very much sobered up over this weekend. Friday after, everybody would go to church. There would be work parties. Friday night, we would start reading What Christmas Means to Me. We always took it extremely seriously because this mesmerism, the materiality, is rampant. And thank God for all of you who are here, who came on Thanksgiving morning. We had 125 people there on Thanksgiving morning. Last year, there were 68. We were happy with 68. It used to be we'd be happy with 10 or 15. So thank God that people are seeing the importance of this and waking up and putting first things first. This day, this weekend, is not about shopping and food and turkey trots and football games. For God's sakes, it is not.
I think one of the things to look at is what's the motive, because the people who opposed Jeremiah, one could look at the money trail again and what was their motive. I mean, it's not only our CSBOD that is ignoring the spiritual aspect of Christian Science and Christianity, but I've been in some of these mega churches because my wife used to always want to go listen to music on Christmas Eve, and I went along. It was just amazing to me to see these wall-sized TVs, you know, and everybody was very happy there, but then the way they presented the birth of Christ was, to me, was just absolutely shocking, so I quit going to them.
Good for you. Thank you. The whole thing is to mesmerize. And certainly all of these handheld devices as well as television are great. You can call them, I call them propaganda boxes, mesmerism boxes. Mrs. Evans, that was one of the reasons she didn't want to have our church on the website. She thought the computer was just, what she used to say. Everybody would, well, I can't even, censored what she used to say.
she thought people being mesmerized by it.
Yeah, they'd sit in front of their screens and just totally mesmerized. So now we're very grateful to have us on the Internet. Everyone else is, and we need to be working and getting it out to all mankind. But she felt very strongly about it, about being mesmerized by the boob tube, as it's known, and the computers. Okay, let's go to Jeremiah, please.
All right. The topic is, O House of Israel. And the Bible's readings were from Jeremiah 18 and Jeremiah 15, verses 19 to 21. Although, of course, if anyone found anything else about Jeremiah to share, they are more than welcome because there is a wealth out there. So the first question is, who is Jeremiah?
Jeremiah was the son of Hilkiah, a Levitical priest. He was likely born between 650 and 645 B.C., was from a small village, Anathoth, 3 miles northeast of Jerusalem in the territory of Benjamin.
Jeremiah was a prophet. One of the things I was reading was saying that they knew he was going to be a prophet before he was actually born. But he was a prophet, I guess, for about 45 years. And he's also known as the weeping prophet. Here he is trying to warn people about what's going to happen and no one's listening. And that would, on occasion, really get to him. And God had to kick him in the pants occasionally to keep it, to not be so discouraged. But he was with Josiah, who was the last king, I guess, who actually feared God and did good. And you didn't really hear too much about him that during that time until after Josiah's death, and they had to deal with the sons who really went rampant into error. And but the one thing that really struck me about Jeremiah was that he was unflinchingly faithful to God. If God told him to do something, he did it, even if he was not too crazy about doing it. He would do it. And he survived being thrown into a prison pit and all kinds of other stuff. So I was very impressed with him.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Well, I read also that Jeremiah signifies one raised up by the Lord. And of course, if the Lord raised him up, then he was directed rightly and supported by God through his all this way.
He certainly was.
He must have had a good mother.
It's interesting, though. What was he told? He was told he should not marry, nor should he have children. And why was that?
Well, he had a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if he had married and had kids, all these kings and countries and everything would have used that family against him. It would have been harder to stay on mission.
Yeah. And also it describes what would happen to them under these horrific condition. Very sobering. Better not to.
What was the general state of Israel and Judah at this time?
Well, they were worshiping idols. It wasn't very good.
Yeah, these are a list of the persistent sins of the people that Jeremiah spoke out about. And it will explain what their atmosphere was like. They had broken their covenant with God, Jeremiah 11:10. They worshipped false gods called Baal. You know about that. They built altars to Baal and sacrificed their children. Now, when I read these things, think about our modern times, okay? Do people even have a covenant with God anymore? We've talked about false gods, the god of materia medica, the god of education,
the god of federal government,
god of travel and vacation and entertainment. And maybe we don't put our children on a burning altar, but when we worship these gods, what do we do to our children?
Sacrifice them.
Yeah, we damn them, don't we?
Yes, we are sacrificing them. We are. Might not be in the exact way that it was done then, but that's what we're doing, and we're seeing, you know, all these shootouts in schools and other things. It says, Jeremiah 22:21, I, meaning God, I spake unto thee in thy prosperity, but thou saidst, I will not hear. This has been thy manner from thy youth, that thou obeyest not my voice. So, God is speaking. When we say, I'm not listening, and you have your children, no, you don't need God either. You don't have to listen. Sunday morning, instead of going to church, you know, go to your sports events, your play practice. That's another thing that's listed that he spoke out against, is breaking the Sabbath. So building altars to Baal and sacrificing their children, pride and ingratitude toward God's loving kindness, pride. I did it. I built these houses. I'm worshiping my job because my job is great. I'm making a lot of money and I'm building all these wonderful things or whatever it is you think your business is doing and your pride in it. And then in gratitude toward God's loving kindness, can't even come on a holiday, Thanksgiving, to praise him and thank him. You got to stay home and become saturated with all the gifts that God has given and yet not thank the giver of all good. Adultery, absolutely, everywhere. All kinds of immorality and on TV and movie screens. Then oppressing strangers, orphans, and widows, maybe not caring. I always ask, you know, we all should be giving to charity. That's part of the biblical rules of finance. Make sure we are taking care of those who need to be taken care of in that way. Lying and slander, certainly see that. It's hard to tell fact from fiction anymore. Sabbath breaking, which I mentioned, and then, again, idolatry. These are some of the sins that Jeremiah exposed and spoke out against. And what did the people say to him? That's one of the questions.
One of my favorite was they said he was not a real Israelite. Didn't care. And he was the problem.
They turn the lie.
Said there's no hope. We're not going to follow after this. They went even so far as to devise devices against Jeremiah. Nobody was neutral there. They were either for or against, and there were many who were adamantly against. Jeremiah was just obeying God and doing what he should. Had to face this.
And Linda, what did you say about him speaking out? How did he feel about it at first?
Oh, yes. What was very interesting is that there were several times where he didn't want to do it anymore. He said, I don't want to do this. And then I had the quote, and I don't have it now, so I'll find it later. I'll share it. But it was basically, he said he couldn't help it. He had to speak, and it would just, every time he would say no, it would come up and well up in him, and he had to speak.
Thank you.
There are a few people who've had that experience, aren't there? What did Jonah do when God told him to do the same thing? He ran the other way.
It said, God's word became like a fire in his heart. And that's what happens. A lot of times I don't like to talk about this either. Goodness me, years ago, heavens, I would never want to talk about this. It was awful. Who would want to talk about this? But now I can't help it.
It reminds me of that article called Reformers by Mary Baker Eddy. And she describes those that endure all the persecution, disapproval, and opposition, and yet stay faithful to their mission. And the point being, these are just a few people, but they do like the greatest good for civilization and humanity. Because they're obeying God. It's like, how can they not do this? They have to follow God and obey him. Fulfill the mission, despite all the noise and opposition that it generates. How can they not do it? There's no way they can back down. These are the reformers.
So ask yourself, do you feel the danger sufficiently? God burning in your heart that you have to speak up, you have to do something? For the sake of mankind? Or are you afraid of making people feel so uncomfortable?
Well, you going to say something, Jeremy?
No.
Now, and listen to this. When you continue in this sin over and over and over, and we've talked about this at the round table, you override your conscience over and over and over. Conscience, because we all have a conscience, all telling us what we should do and not do. That's God speaking to us. When you don't listen to it over long periods of time and override it, what happens?
Stop hearing it.
Stop hearing it.
And what does Mrs. Eddy call that state of thought?
Moral idiocy.
Moral idiocy?
Yes.
So you keep bullheaded it going along, ignoring the Bible, science and health, it's both important, and all that God's telling you, and these are the effects of that sin. It has a numbing effect. You no longer believe in God, and you no longer fear Him. Because everything seems to be going okay. Oh, you know, I haven't had any major wars, or my life is fine. I'm not having really any big problems. Okay. So, it's this numbness process. That was what I described when people are talking to you and you don't hear it anymore. You're just plunging headlong. And I thought this was interesting. Jeremiah 6:15. Were they ashamed when they had committed abomination? Nay, they were not at all ashamed. Neither could they blush. Couldn't even blush. Therefore they shall fall among them that fall. At that time that I visit them, they shall be cast down, saith the Lord. And then this is what goes on. Now this isn't what God does, but it's what happens when this type of behavior continues. God withdraws His blessing. He's not doing it, but you're not listening anymore. Famine and starvation. Invaders would plunder them. They would be taken captive into a foreign land. They replace Him with false gods who would not make them feel guilty or convict them of sin. Well, that's going on. They replace God with false gods who don't make you feel guilty and don't convict you of sin. So you feel fine, you can do whatever you want, and it's okay. It's all right to do all of this stuff.
Just find a pill to pop.
And a drink to drink. Yep, a drink and a pill. But all these other things, the famine and starvation, invaders plundering, taken captive into a foreign land. And isn't this what happened in this case? Because they wouldn't listen to Jeremiah. And if you don't think it won't happen here, you have to think again. I'll let Gary speak to that. Well, what happens when we have a republic 200 years after?
Oh, well, you see it, yeah. I mean, you see it in society, you see it in your government. And, you know, this nation started out as a republic based on Christian principles, based on the basis of it being that our individual relationship with God is sacrosanct, and that the only purpose of a human government is to protect that relationship and to promote it. And that works as long as we abide by Christian principles and are willing to live and be responsible for our own actions. But once you lose the moral fortitude, the moral compass, you start worshiping other gods. religion becomes socialism. You start worshiping the federal government instead of God, depending upon it instead of depending upon God. And this experiment has been tried by mankind in the past, and history has shown that after a couple hundred years, republics tend to degenerate into democracies. And democracies tend to degenerate morally and economically and end up getting taken over because they tax themselves to death, literally. It doesn't happen quickly. It takes years and years and years of falling away from God, falling away from true Christianity. But when it happens, it takes everybody by surprise. People wonder what went wrong. What happened to the Israelites? Babylon came along, and all of a sudden, they were slaves. That lasted for a long time.
And, you know, when you read the story and know the history of our country and you realize what the pilgrims did, because all of these stories of our histories are getting rewritten. They came here because in every other country, whoever was king, well, I'm king and I'm Catholic, then all of you have to be Catholic too, and if you're not, it's off with your head. That was how it was done. And these brave people said, we don't want to live this way anymore. We want a place where we can worship freely. And they suffered in tremendous hardship to get themselves here and to start here with this sense of religious freedom for all, freedom that everyone wants. And it's fine when you want to come and have this freedom for all, yes, cherished and kept, and the Christianity cherished and kept, which is what it is based on, Christ Christianity. But when it gets all murky and let's all just combine and everybody one happy, happy family and who knows who's going to be the leader, well, then we're in trouble, all right? Christ is our leader, and we must have those rights. That is what we look for, and these are perilous times because there are those who would like to take that from us. So, and if you read the history, which I have been doing, which I haven't really done most of my life, you don't, even when I was in school, I didn't get it the way you get it. When you really look, you really want to know the truth and what's going on, you can find it. And you can be darn grateful for the sacrifices that have gone before us, and you will be very much willing to be able to make those sacrifices yourself. Only we are asked to do much less, aren't we? We're not fighting in a huge war right at the moment. You're asked to do some watches and do some other things. And if that's too much for you, well, honey.
Good luck.
Yep, good luck in the future.
We may be asked to do much less, but it has a wonderful healing. I see it everywhere I go. I'm so grateful for that.
Well, that's it. The work that we're asked to do, that God has given us to do, is a joy to do. If you don't fight it, if you get rid of the pride and so forth that would oppose it, it is a great joy to do this work.
And this, when we do this work, this is what will happen. God promises he would bring the remnant back to Judah and to rebuild Jerusalem and her temple. And that means what's going on here as well. And God would raise up a descendant of David, Christ Jesus. That has already been done. Plus, we've got Christianity known as Christian Science. God would heal the spiritual wounds of his people, restore his covenant with them, and build up and plant his people, Israel, again. And then I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and they are my people. And Janet is right. there's a revival, renewal is going on, because I think people are waking up. But have to make sure we...
Yeah, I mean, we have a tremendous prosperity in this country that the world has never known before. And what's the danger of prosperity?
Complacency.
Complacency, thank you. That we forget to thank the giver of the good in the first place.
Well, it's just like what Judah was saying to Jeremiah. They didn't want to do anything that jeopardized them.
Well, yeah. I mean, Israel was relatively prosperous at this point in time. Things were going okay for most people. A lot of people were just kind of happy.
It reminds me of, we watched this movie that was about Hosea, and he was giving his prophecies, and the shopkeeper said, "Why are you always coming here saying these things? Our gods are doing just fine by us." And I think of that a lot. It's like, our gods are doing just fine by us, but they're not really.
I think that's the problem, is that prosperity covers things, because we don't see the facts as they are, because we are sacrificing our children. We send them off to college and they're exposed to drugs, alcohol, guns, and we can't do anything about it, yet romaine lettuce in one day is off all the shelves in every supermarket, at least my area.
That's a good point.
I also think that we are in a fierce war. We're not carrying guns to war as such, but the mental war is going on. And thank God Mrs. Eddy has proven how it can be won. And each of our challenges that come is an attack, really. So we are continually in the war to do our best, as she has directed.
That is it.
Thank you, Florence. That's so true. Mrs. Eddy has given us science behind all this. So now we can recognize that the warfare is not material warfare. It is a mental, spiritual warfare. And as long as we remember that, and as long as we are on the right side of that warfare, we will be victorious. Remember, one with God is a majority.
And yeah, I think it's a...
And the battle is the Lord's. We have to remember. The battle is not between people. The battle is the Lord's.
It's always the human mind.
The
human mind
is the enemy.
That is the enemy always, in its various forms, but it is never person, place, or thing. Animal magnetism, deceiving, mesmerizing. Who is going to speak?
I was going to say that my good friend, in a sense, we don't even know it, but we have soldiers all over the world. My good friend's grandson is fighting in Syria. He lost a good buddy, and he saved another life. But we are fighting also, still, even though we know this is a mental war, but like Martha Wilcox said, we have to see it as it really is. Thank you.
Yes, no, yeah. And that we do, and we should be praying for our soldiers all around the world, all everywhere. Yes, this is Mrs. Wilcox's article, War, is a wonderful one. But if we fight the mental warfare that needs to be fought now, which is going on now, which is raging now, then we can avoid physical combat.
Yeah, the whole point of this Bible study is not to depress you. Or discourage you in any way, because there is an answer, and it's a wonderful answer.
So grateful we have the answer.
Well, and with that is the responsibility to live it and to share it and give it and to warn those who need to be warned.
A great deal of what Mrs. Eddy did in her home with her students was this mental warfare going on. is watching, and we know that by the unauthorized literature. And she often knew when storm clouds were gathering and avoided many things that the world could have gotten involved in. It was her work. She worked, I'm sure, 24/7. She was always at it. And talked about things that happened after her passing. And that's why this work must be revived and continued, and it is.
What I love about I love how the Bible has the answer to all of today's problems. Every problem we have in this modern society, you can go back to the Bible because history repeats itself and find how to fix what's happening now. I mean, the answers are all in the Bible. It's so useful for every age, and that's why I really appreciate these Bible studies, because I never really felt that way about the Bible before. I didn't realize it was a handbook for life.
Thank you. Nor did I.
Nor did I.
And I have, still people saying, well, the New Testament's good, but I don't like all this stuff in the Old Testament. But you see, we make it relevant. It's why people don't want to see it. It's just what we talked about at the very beginning. People don't want to hear it. Well, we have to hear it. Makes you uncomfortable.
They didn't want to hear it at the time it was taking place.
they did not.
But wouldn't it be a tremendous boon for our society if the Bible were required curriculum in all the schools?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and what would the devil really want? They would want the Supreme Court to prevent that from happening, right?
Right.
So we are in a battle, the most important battle this world has ever seen.
And it's made inroads. There are good things going on, yes, that's true, but there's also a lot of inroads that have been made.
Error doesn't want truth to be known.
It does not.
What I loved about this lesson was that analogy of the potter's wheel, which I never even really appreciated very well, and that's that you can take that same lump of clay that made a ugly-looking pot and collapse it back down and then bring it out. Well, this is a talented potter, of course, which God is, and bring it out into this absolutely beautiful, graceful form.
Mm-hmm. That's it. And if we just let him do his work, I mean, and there's nothing to fear by yielding to him, every good thing to gain. Christ Christianity, that we're talking about heaven on earth. As in heaven, so on earth. And many of us do experience these wonderful heaven-like times.
And as we have learned, the fact is, his work is done. His work is perfect. It's our perception of his work that needs to be fixed.
Yes. His work is done. His kingdom come. The potter's work made plain. One of our hymns. Eternal mind, the potter is.
51. Thank you, Bruce.
51.
Eternal mind, the potter is, and thought the eternal clay. The hand that fashions is divine. His works pass not away. Man is the noblest work of God, his beauty, power, and grace. Immortal, perfect as his mind, reflected face to face. And then the last verse. God's will is done, his kingdom come. The potter's work is plain. The longing to be good and true has brought the light again. And man does stand as God's own child, the image of his love. Let gladness ring from every tongue, and heaven and earth approve.
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you. So who else? Linda, did you have more to give? Or
no, Lauren? I think that's a good way to end it. Anyone else does?
And well, thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Linda.
Thank you.
Thank you.